News Radio WJPF at 8:22. We're joined by Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. First off, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. This criminal justice reform last week, a lot of people have a lot of questions, a lot of stuff being said, law enforcement back and forth, and I thought this was a great opportunity for us to clear it up. I want to thank you first for taking the time out on this holiday to join us.
It's my pleasure, and I think it's important to discuss these things in detail because, you know, it could be characterized one way and when the facts are different.
You know, when I was talking to someone in Springfield, they described you as the architect of this. Is that true?
Well, a portion of it, you know, and it's I focused on certification, enhancing our police certification process in the state, and I worked with law enforcement to do that, as well as I had a provision with regards to patterns and practice investigations and improving the way we service our crime victims.
Right, and I noticed a lot of that. That was a long read, by the way, when I was starting that on Sunday morning. Now, when you look at this as a body of work, what do you hope to achieve with this legislation?
Well, first of all, you know, most of our law enforcement is responsible, and they go out and protect us and put their lives on the line. But there's some law enforcement officers that do a discredit to those who do their job right, and we didn't have a good enough system in Illinois that can hold them accountable as compared to other states, Missouri, Florida, Georgia, a great number of states that we looked at to change the language. Before, you can only decertify an officer in the state of Illinois if they were convicted of a felony, whereas it's really difficult to charge and convict a police officer, even when we know they've done something wrong that's unbecoming of them being a police officer. So I work with police chiefs, sheriffs. We had conversations with the FOP, and we developed language to enhance the way we can get rid of the bad cops such that we can lift up the good cops.
Yeah. A great many officials, however, pick this law enforcement in particular, saying ending cash bail will increase repeat offenders. And they point out that basically we have this policy in place for COVID-19 right now, and that people are arrested and then released. And of course, this is a program that would be phased in starting this coming year, June and July. But in one case, a mayor says, look, we had a high-speed chase in our town. The perpetrator actually rammed a police car, and we let him go later that night. This seems to be the biggest contentious point. Is this accurate? Because people saying, look, cashless bail for arson, robbery, and kidnapping, is that true?
Well, the whole system is a cashless bail system. That doesn't mean we remove discretion from judges to say this person is a high risk to the public safety of the community or a particular individual. That's what it should be based on. It should be based on not how much money you have, because, you know, you can have a drug dealer who's a serious risk to the public because of violent acts he's committed. But he might have enough cash to bail himself out, and then you could have somebody who might be a user who might be poor, and they're held for a long time just because they have no money. That's not the system that we want. We want people held who are serious risks to the public.
Well, and I think as I was going through this legislation in particular, on that note, you talk about this in this legislation that there needs to be more latitude for judges in this, because, and I've had a lot of judges complain about this mandatory sentencing, that this would change in the state of Illinois as well.
Yeah, and I've worked historically on trying to make clear that the system that we've historically created by just enhancing penalties and creating mandatory minimums does not allow for a judge to look at individualized situations. Yeah, will you occasionally have a judge that makes a bad decision? Yeah, that's the case, but you don't want to totally tie their hands where there's an injustice, where we all know that somebody should not be held in prison for an extremely long period of time when any sane person, any reasonable person can look at it, but our laws would prevent us from doing so. And so we need to do a better job of individualized justice so we could keep people safe And so we don't spend the extraordinary amount of money we spend keeping people behind bars that, quite frankly, shouldn't be there.
It's interesting you mention that, because I have a lot of judges who said they tell us to use our lifetime of experience and employ it behind the bench and then give us mandatory sentencing. So I've known some judges to agree that needs to go away. And you know, one of the largest areas of agreement in speaking with law enforcement about the House Bill 3653 that was passed last week is training, and you talked about this, certification and stopping. It was interesting, one law enforcement official called them gypsies, people who have these historical problems. They get hid, they move on to another job, commit another crime, move on to another job, that there needs to be a way of tracking and stopping this. Minimum standards for training.
Yeah, so we try to have unified standards. So first of all, that, you know, we do our best job to know that, you know, a cop in Southern Illinois is trained as good as a cop in Northern Illinois or Central Illinois, such that if they do go from one police department to another, we get somebody who's gotten a similar training, at least. Secondly, we create a database such that if a cop quits while under investigation or is fired from another police department, they don't just go to another police department and start doing the same thing. We had a situation in Central Illinois where a cop was under investigation for a criminal sexual assault, quit, didn't get prosecuted, and then went and got hired by another police department and committed a similar act. We need to stop that. We also need to provide prosecutors who have to put cops on the stand with information that might affect the credibility, and this is information that they're required to disclose to the defendant, and if they don't, it could compromise the prosecution. And so we heard from prosecutors throughout the state that they need this information, and so we create a database such that they can get this information.
Now, body camera mandates and storage, all right? This is another one people talk, good idea, implementation, not so much. Now, first off, I got like three questions, inside questions, because somebody told me that it was you had to keep the videos for 5 years. When I was reading the legislation, I saw 90. I didn't see 90 days.
You know, I'd love to say that I'm fully informed on that portion of the legislation. That's one I didn't negotiate, but I can tell you this, that 6 years ago I passed legislation that set protocol for how long that you're supposed to keep your body camera on whenever you're engaging the public, such that we're capturing everything. With regards to the having the body cams and the mandate, and, you know, many criticize and rightly criticized this legislation as being an unfunded mandate. However, they put out the effective date of the body camera mandate such that they can come up with a funding stream to support it.
Yeah, and that's one. I mean, a local official who's listening to the program this morning says for his county, they estimated $400,000 in cost, saying we don't have that time of money, which came up to me when I was speaking with an area mayor. And he says, first off, the money, we live on very thin margins here. But he says, the thing that I'm worried about is FOIA requests. And I asked him why. He says, hypothetically, imagine we got a police officer, somebody puts in a FOIA request, and they are at a site where there's an ambulance and somebody's been hurt. How do I redact that information so that I observe HIPAA laws while at the same time fulfill the FOIA requests? And so that's just one of the ways he sees there a problem in his community, being able to meet these requirements.
Yeah, well, you know, we had an incident in Chicago that has come to light recently of a wrong raid, and where the Chicago Police Department went to the wrong home. A woman was naked, and, you know, she had all of these police officers in her apartment pointing a gun at her and, you know, not getting anything right away to cover herself. There was a FOIA for the tape of this, and there's a provision in the law that I passed 6 years ago when I was in the legislature that makes it such that this information is protected, that you can't release such a tape unless you get the consent of the individual. So there was a TV station that requested the tape, and it was initially denied because they didn't have the consent of the subject that was on tape, which is an innocent woman. They later on got that consent. from her because she wanted it brought to light.
Right. Just met with the mayor. She just met with the mayor recently, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the mayor initially said that, hey, yeah, we signed off on keeping it private, which is a little bit inaccurate. What the situation was, we indicated to CBS TV that they would have to have the consent. We didn't say it was just, you know, there's no way of FOIAing it. We just said they would have to get right. consent, which I think they later got. So yeah. It was a little bit of mischaracterization of our posture.
Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul is joining us this morning. When you look through the legislation and said it's a long read, there are three things really that stood out to me. And one is the development and creation of the Task Force on Constitutional Rights and some of their responsibilities. What is the Task Force of Constitutional Rights' job?
Well, I think what the legislature had in mind, and I wasn't involved in negotiating this portion. I did weigh in on cash bail a little bit. But I think as we look forward to doing things, because just as I approached legislation 6 years ago and before on criminal justice reform, we know as we go along, we don't get everything right. We don't cover everything. And I think that you need to have a body to look at these things over time such that, you know, you don't meet the criticism that the legislature got this past week for doing too much at the last minute without having enough people at the table discussing it over time. And I think it's appropriate to have a task force to look at these things and to look at how we might do policy better in a sort of a deliberative manner instead of just at a last-minute manner.
You know, because one of the issues had been the issue of qualified immunity for police officers. Mm-hmm. And what I find is interesting is this Task Force on Constitutional Rights in Article 4, this was sent to me by one of the mayors here in Southern Illinois, Steve Frattini from Herron, saying that this Task Force on Constitutional Rights will also look into qualified immunity for police officers. So that's not completely off the table when it comes to negotiations based on the outcome of this this task force work.
Yeah, well, it's important to note that when you talk about things like qualified immunity, which is a federal doctrine, by the way, it's a doctrine that grows out of a federal court decision, and it's most applicable in federal court. And so, as I weighed in on it, I said, this is probably something that you want to pull out and discuss away from the state legislature and maybe have a discussion with Congress as to how to deal with instances where there may be overreach on qualified immunity, but do so in a reasonable manner. But at the end of the day, it's something that should not be done at the 23rd hour, and it should entail a comprehensive discussion.
You know, it was interesting. Mugshots can no longer be published on social media, but the media, such as myself, can still get those. There was one other item in this particular category that caught my attention because we've not talked much about drug abuse and the problems that are created by that. Good people who get hooked on drugs, and making this a funding priority for deflection programs. This is an intriguing idea that you put this in place and highly prioritized in this legislation. What is it?
Well, that provision, to be honest with you, I was unfamiliar with. Again, I was focused on some of the law enforcement reform and criminal crime victim services, but I've always been an advocate of diversion for those who may be users and have a addiction problem and not as much as a criminal problem, where we have those who are drug involved who are pushing drugs versus using them. And so how we approach drug use, we need to sort of revolutionize and invest our money appropriately in treatment and getting people off of addiction rather than just throwing them behind bars. Now, granted, there are circumstances where you may have somebody who's drug involved who's committing other criminal acts, and you have to hold them accountable. And so some treatment might have to happen in the Department of Corrections or at the jail at the local level. But in other instances where you may have somebody who's not really a risk to somebody's public safety or to the protection of their property, who's in need of treatment, we ought to invest in those things. We have an opioid crisis, which I and my state's attorney general colleagues are working on trying to hold those responsible for it. And we hope to get resources as a result of our litigation that we can invest in treatment throughout our state and throughout the states, throughout our country.
And working with families to find treatment for their sons and daughters. Treatment's hard to find. Now, this is another issue, and I know we're running out of time. Attorney General Kwame Raoul is joining us this morning, so I'm going to try to cut off some of these things and run towards the end of the list, but I can't skip this one because multiple law enforcement agents and elected officials have said are worried about this. Can someone have an anonymous affidavit complaint against a police officer? This is brought up specifically, and once again, page 93, the Policing Community Relations Improvement states that shall be required for a person filing a complaint against a sworn peace officer to have the complaint supported by a sworn affidavit or other legal documents. Now, the question is, can you file an anonymous affidavit just because you don't like cop and try to get him fired? Can that be done with this?
It's not as simple as that, and there's previous language that might have invited such a thing. We also, in the certification process, initially had similar language that was open to, somebody who might have animus towards a cop file an anonymous complaint. And I personally said, in having conversations with my law enforcement partners, maybe we could put language in there that provides for a confidential complaint that is verified and that's by objective verifiable evidence. Because part of the concern is you have some police departments where people are in fear of the entire police department. Not all police departments are the same. Mm-hmm. And so you may have people who are afraid to come forth for fear of retaliation, and we don't want to deter that. Those who we would want to make sure wouldn't come forth are those who are going to come forth with false complaints, and that's why we require this objective verifiable evidence for any such complaints where the complainant would remain confidential.
You know, it's interesting. I read the governor's press release last week. I think, in my mind, pretty clear he'll sign it. How long does he have? 30 days?
He has 60 days, I believe.
60. Okay.
I think it's important to note that there were hearings on a lot of these provisions. If I had my druthers, would we have had more time to discuss all of these provisions? Most certainly. In the days leading up to it, I was unaware of a lot of the provisions included in the bill, and so I and my staff had to play catch up. I was pulled in as sort of a mediator at times between some of my law enforcement partners and some of the legislators, and to try to help negotiate some of the language on things like cash bail and anonymous complaints. And I did my best job in trying to do so, but I did not. I'm no longer in the legislature, and I did not have control of the entire process. But the great thing about a lot of these provisions is the delayed effective date. And if there's something that was missed, that's something that needs to be corrected, that's something that the legislature does all the time,
right?
By way of amending our laws.
And I was looking at the monthly report requirements are retroactive back to January 1st of 2016 and some others to 2017. Before I let you go, and I do need to let you go, I've kept you much longer than I had hoped and agreed to, so I apologize in advance. Joe Biden, day four of his presidency, he says he's going to do criminal justice reform. I think that is interesting, but I'm curious, before I let you go, what, in your mind, there's a lot of fundamental changes in the eye of law enforcement. In your mind, of these myriad of changes, what do you think is singularly important in the conclusion that should be drawn from this body of work?
You said one thing, and I'd like to use my privilege to extend to two things. One, I think we've got accountability and for law enforcement. And, you know, I'm part of law enforcement. And so I think people sometimes look at it the wrong way, that it is something that is anti-police. And I think it's pro-police, because what it does, what it will do in the long run is restore confidence in police officers, lift up the community's ability to cooperate with the law enforcement officers who are hardworking law enforcement officers who leave their homes every day not knowing whether they'll come back the same way they left. And so I think that's important, that we encourage investment in more training. And then on the other thing end of things, with regards to criminal justice, that we do smart criminal justice. We're smart on crime instead of just tough on crime, and we're not wasting our taxpayer dollars on holding people in prison longer than they should be, or holding people in prison who need treatment rather than to be incarcerated.
Kwame Raoul, Attorney General, State of Illinois. I can't tell you much. I appreciate your time. I know I kept you long, so when you said, I want a privilege to you, if there's anything else that you want to say, now's the time, because I know I've got to let you go. And if but is there something else that we need to talk about before I let you go? Because I would like to hear
well,
it.
Well, I would just say this as one last thing. We're on high alert for threats of to our state buildings and to our federal buildings as we approach the inauguration. We need to just move beyond the point where we handle our questions about how things are done in government in the way that it was handled last week. I don't think any reasonable person endorses what happened at our nation's capital last week, and we need to not only denounce it afterwards, we need to make sure we don't use rhetoric that incites it in the first place.